So I want to talk about the second pasuk in Parshat Vayeshev, which says, "Eltolot Yaakov Yosef ben Shiva Asrei Shana Hayaroe Et Achav Bason Vehu Naar Et Bnei Zilpa That Bnei Zilpa Nishay Aviv Vayave Yosef Et Dibatam Ra'a El Avihem." I'd forgotten to put on the sheet. That's why I just read the whole thing. So looking at this pasuk, I wanted to focus on the words Vehu Naar Et Bnei Zilpa That Bnei Zilpa, that he leave word untranslated with the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah. And kind of what was, first of all, just figure out what does that phrase mean? And also, like, what effect does that have on the whole story that we're going to have, that we have later, with Yosef's being sold into slavery? Because something I've found interesting is, and you'll see it when we go through the sources, is that a lot of different places, like the different places, give very different pictures of what this means about the relationship between Yosef and the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. So some of them paint a very positive picture of what their relationship looks like. And if that's the case, we're left with a really big question. So why are they among the brothers who are selling him? And some of them paint a much more negative picture, and then it kind of makes more sense. So what's also just interesting is the way that this, how the Midrashim and Parshanim see this little segment of the Pasuk in relation to the other parts of the Pasuk, meaning the idea of the Hu Na'ar, that he's a young man and working with sheep, and then the later part is the Dibat Hamra'ah, the what we'll just call Lashon Hara. There's also a discussion, what does that mean? But that's sort of beyond the scope of what we're doing. And so, how that interplays with the different parts of the Pasuk. Is this a, just different separate ideas that are not related to each other? Is it a contrast? Is it a things that are working together to explain the motivations that are going on? So I brought a lot of sources. Just in each of the sources, I kind of bolded the main points. So there are some, like, extra parts that are coming before and after, but let's start. Let's go through it. Okay, so first I brought just the structure of what we're doing. First I brought some sources that kind of paint a negative picture of the relationship. Then I brought that have a more positive picture, and then the Ramban actually addresses kind of both reads, so I brought him at the end. Okay, so does someone want to start with, and also, I want this to be a discussion, so if you have ideas or thoughts or whatever, please interject, interrupt me. Go for it. Okay.
Can you just say our ideas, just looking at the pasuk in
itself? Sure. Great, go for it.
I mean, I would think that the words dibatam ra'a and having the word ra'a in there is obviously negative. I mean, how could you have any positive spin on the word dibatam ra'a, right?
Okay, so that's true.
Or as in, if there is a positive function, it must be that there must be some really good reason why something negatively said things could lead to a positive thing.
Right. Okay. So now you're making an assumption, though. Can you just think of the assumption you're making in your question?
Yeah. But all just like different ideas.
Right. So it's because you're making an assumption there, which is going to be addressed, that the Dibat Hamra'ah is about Bnei Bilhah and Bnei Zilpah. Not, if that is the case, then great, we have our answer of why are Bilhah and Zilpah's sons angry. But if the Dibat Hamra'ah isn't about them, then already, that. So we're going to see, there are different people say different things about that. Okay. So should we go clockwise, counterclockwise, new sources? It's all Hebrew. There isn't really Aramaic right here, I don't think. Go first.
Okay. V'hunar, Chayam mitgagel, mitaken b'saro, m'ala b'akivo, v'hu ma'ase na'arot.
Okay, so just the way that he's bringing v'hunar is it's a completely unrelated idea. He's just someone who's young, does these things young people do. Okay. So The first thing is the idea of, so the second explanation is it's putting the Bahu Na'ar and B'nai Bilhah B'nai Zohar together. And what's saying Bahu Na'ar is that he would boss them around. He would say, you do this, you do that. Why? Because he thinks because you're the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, you're more lowly.
Right, and you wouldn't get a piece of the Yerushalayim.
Right.
Rabbi Huda Omer, Etibatam Shalbin Leash, Ayu Korean, Lubnash Bakotavadim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Alkulan Homer, Vayo Yosef Edibatamar Ash, Ayu Tolime and Bibnota Arts. Lepika Karabo, it should put it far. Shinemar, but he said it should Adonab et in.
Okay. So just point, so now tying this into the Dibatam Ra'ah. So the first thing, so is, as you're saying, the Dibatam Ra'ah is specifically about them, that you'll. And we're also tying that into the idea that they're shepherds. So now it's their shepherds, and he's bossing them around, and he's reporting to his father, they're doing a bad job. So that's one narrative that the Midrash sees happening. A second idea is, we have two separate ideas, is he's bossing around the B'nai Bilhah, B'nai Zilpah, so they don't like him. And then he's also telling on the rest of his brothers, which is why they don't like him. And the third thing is giving a reason that the Dibat Ra'ah is bad about all of them. So just looking at this, also, just something, another point that's interesting to notice is when he's, in the opinion that the Dibat is specifically about B'nai Leah, because they're saying that the sons of Bilhah Zilpah are lower, what's interesting is that in that, when he's bossing them around, it's for the exact same reason. Which, if you think about it, because why does he feel that he has the right to boss them around? Because they're the B'nai Pilakshim. And what's he telling on with B'nai Leah? That they're calling him slaves. So he's kind of treating them as a slave, which is actually something that's interesting. And, you know, kind of, I won't say fitting per se, but ironic that, you know, one of his punishments at the end is that he's sold into slavery. And just thinking about their motivations here, so looking at, you know, the motivations of B'nai Bilhah, B'nai Zilpah in particular, you know, they could be kind of saying, look, you know, you're treating us like we're lower than you, like we're your slaves, so now, you know, maybe selling them into slavery isn't such a crazy payback. I don't know. Give me a look.
I mean, I think it's just ironic because in the way that the Psukim depicts Mechirat Yosef, it seems like it was almost happenstance, right? They decided, mm-hmm. they were thinking about killing him, but no, wait, we'll just let him die a slow and painful death in a pit. Oh, but no, wait, now we see the Midianites and the Egyptians coming, and we can sell them into slavery. I mean, it happens to work out really well with Midah Keneged Midah, like just like Yosef was bossy to his siblings, so too they subjugated him to the lowliness of slavery. Like, that does totally fit, but in the way that it actually works out, is that really so obvious?
Is it, right, so meaning, the question is, does it fit, is that really a motive?
Yeah.
Okay, that's definitely, definitely fair. Yeah, I mean, this is all just a lot of suggestions, ideas. So it's just like one, so that's kind of one view of how their relationship is working out. Zahavi, you want to read the next one?
Sure. Huna Arat Nebo Habet Bnei Zobab Ravor Hayoto Katan Samhu Bnei Hashvacho Shamashtahem. So because he was younger, the Shvachot put him as a
like a
servant to them, right? Kiim Yisharachav Bnei Hagvira Lo Haya Devar Ra. Because if the brothers were like,
I think what it's saying is if the other brothers would have been the ones. I think what's happening, because we can kind of stop here, the Zotni Dibatam Ra'ah, is the idea, so Ibn Ezra said, which is kind of interesting because it's the opposite of Midrash, is that in the Midrash, Yosef bosses around Bilhah and Zilpah's sons. Here it's Bilhah and Zilpah bossing around Yosef. And then Yosef is, and so the second part of Ibn Ezra, what he's saying is that if it were B'nai Leah that were bossing me around, well, we're equals, so like they kind of have a right to boss me around on their little brother. But B'nai Bilhah, B'nai Zilpah, since they are the sons of Pilakshim, we're not really equals. I'm really better than they are. And they have no right to boss me around. And so that's when he goes and tells on his father to say, hey, they're bossing me around, that's not okay. So it's interesting, like, the way that that's sort of both playing on the idea that but that the B'nai Belha, B'nai Zilpa are lower than Yosef in status, but just the idea of who's bossing around who is flipped, which is kind of interesting.
I'm really intrigued in that the Ibn Ezra presumes that B'nai Rachel and B'nai Leah are equal, because are they really equal? Right? Yaakov really wished he could have married Rachel, and Rachel definitely was the loved wife. I mean, we see that in the story of the Dudaim, and also the names of Leah's children, that Leah was the preferred wife. So it's interesting, though, how Ibn Ezra, who's a Pashtan, is saying that, no, their children, B'nai Rachel and B'nai Leah, really saw each other as equals, and therefore justifying how B'nai Leah were treating Yosef, essentially. So do you have anything to say about that? Like, is that really true?
I just think that, like, I understand your distinction, but at the end of the day, like, Leah and Rachel are sisters, and Bilhah and Zilpah are servants. So it's like, even though maybe Rachel's children are the most favored, and you see, like, Yaakov loves Yosef the best, still, like, Bilhah and, like, they're on a much more equal level than Bilhah and Zilpah.
Yeah. I mean, I think also, you know, that might then tie into the... You know, Yosef might see them, you know, Yosef probably sees himself as greater, but maybe it's sort of in a general sense of equal, and that's why, you know, kind of Leah's son, because presumably Leah's sons would want to see them as equal, because they would presumably want to see themselves higher, and so maybe, like, later on when they get mad at Yosef, you know, maybe that's part of why it is like, why are you favored and better when you really shouldn't be better, even if Yosef kind of thinks he's better. So, like, maybe...
A mom just put her child as a servant to another child. Like, it just seems like...
Well, I don't think the parents are doing it. I've got the impression that Bilhah and Zilpah, that, like, I'm just using them instead
Who's
of those big four names.
Oh, but, so Muhu is
the brothers.
Yeah. The brothers. I don't think
it's really awkward familial situation. Like, I get what you're saying, though. Like, to have that kind of power disparity in a family just seems really awkward, especially since Yaakov was suffered so much under Laban, and he knows how difficult it is to be effectively a slave for someone for 14 years. So then have that kind of structure in your own family, you'd think that Yaakov would try to do everything in his power to make sure that his family would never have that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so just to continue, the Alshech kind of has just the bold department at Hegi Mam Kinar Misharit. It takes the idea of Na'ar and translates that as servant, because we have sometimes Na'ar as a young person, sometimes as a servant, but other than that, it's kind of similar idea to Ibn Ezra. So I think we should now, just, you know, for timing's sake, kind of skip ahead to the Bereishit Rabbah, which is the first of our sources that depicts a more positive portrayal of the relationship, and kind of try to figure out how that is going to play into Yosef and Bilhah Zilpah's son's power schematic. Okay.
Shemamar Levi Achim, the Kalam Einan Achim, Ela Achim Ein Be'itza. Natlu Ein Itza Al Shechem, Behargu Shnei Marvei, Plu Shnei Bnei Yaakov, Shemamar Levi. Mehe Natlu Itza Al Yosef, Bekakshu Behargu Shnei Marvei, Ru Ish Al Achim, Begomer. So saying that Shimon and Levi were the ones who, like, were basically plotting against Yosef to kill him.
Right, and then it's going to ask, how do we know that? So continue. Okay, so basically here we're trying to figure out whose idea was it to sell Yosef. To kill Yosef. We go through the whole list, and in that we say it can't be the B'nai Shefachot, because we know that they liked each other, which I think is kind of interesting. And then I think this really does still leave us with the question of, so then why did they sell him? Like, I think there's just a really big question mark of, okay, fine, so they weren't the ones who decided to kill him, but they're still going along with him.
Yeah, also, I mean, I think it'll be, like, a power struggle. If the whole concept of them still being, like, lowly, and that they're not equal to, like, Nelea's, so therefore, like, maybe they would have wanted to save Yosef, but they had no say. And it seems like there's a struggle because, like, even all the brothers of Nelea, they're all, like, having these different opinions. Like, Uvin's mind wants to save him, and Yehuda said, oh, let's go sell him. So, like, I feel like they just have no say. It's not necessarily that.
Right, but That's true, but I mean, this is going to be brought up by the Ramban later. But the idea is, now take all the people and add them up together. You have the four B'nai Shvachot, and you have Reuven, who doesn't want to kill him, and you have Yehuda, who doesn't want to kill him, plus you have Yosef, who's the one being sold, and you have Benjamin, who's out of the picture. We're left with four people against eight.
Maybe that's what I understand.
So, like, that's already, like, okay, so maybe those, like, the B'nai Shvachot are weaker. But, like, they're still actually the majority.
Right. But kind of to build on what Helena's saying, like, if you really see yourself as not being, having as much value as other people, you're not going to speak up. Like, a lot of, like different feminist theories or different feminist studies have shown that women feel second-class citizens to men, which explains why women often don't speak up in a crowd full of men. Which also explains why women benefit from single-sex education, because they feel like, oh, I'm not competing against a guy, and I can, and there's no concern that if I raise my hand, I'm going to be judged for it, which explains why women often speak up in all women's environments. So even though the B'nai Bilhah, the B'nai Zilpah, plus both Reuven and Yehuda, we're really a majority compared to the other B'nai Leah, it's possible that even though they were the majority in numbers, they didn't necessarily feel like they were in the majority. I mean, I know what I'm doing right now is conflating a modern idea with what's happening, with a potential reading of the story, which may not be totally legit, but there might be something to that, given what we know with women's education.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. Okay, let's go to the next source, Midrash Tanna Uma, and it was your turn.
Okay, V'chein Yosef lo yigi'u kol otan ha-tarot, ela al lashon hara, shesiper alechav, shene'emar, v'yave Yosef et dibatam ra'a al abihem. Uma
Amarlo,
Rabbanan. Amri Rabbanan Amri Amarla Aviv Shehin Nohagim B'nei Bilhah U'nei Zilpah Minhag Abadim V'korin otan Abadim, va'ani noheg ben minhag achva, shenamar, v'huna ni'er et b'nei Bilhah v'na'ar et b'nei Bilhah v'et b'nei Zilpah v'gomer.
So
it's basically saying, just unlike other people who are treating the b'nei Bilhah and b'nei Zilpah like Abadim, I'm actually being nice to them. So it's almost like Yosef is kind of reporting, like, look, Dad, I'm so awesome, love me.
Yeah, which is interesting because if you remember the first source that we did, we had one of the possibilities of what the Lashon Hara is was the same thing, that they're calling them servants. But there we had that he was kind of also treating them like servants, whereas here he's, you know, at least claiming that he's not doing that. I mean, you know, is that true? Is that not true? Like, this Midrash isn't saying, but he's at least claiming that, you know, I treat them like siblings.
But I mean, it's still, like, very self-congratulatory of, like, pat me on the back, please. I'm so great.
Yeah. No, that's definitely the case. And I think that actually makes sense to, just to go skip ahead. We'll go back, but just to skip ahead to the Fizkuri, where he said, just the bolded part, but I'll take ma'al sham, maybe dibatam al-vihem, ki huayan na'ar. So they're talking about just the fact that he's bringing, like, it's just another interpretation of na'ar is the idea that, like, Yosef's actions, to some extent, is just due to immaturity. Like, you know, he's 17, which I guess, yeah, they consider to be, yeah, that's not that much younger than we are, but I guess, like, in Tanakh sense, like, that's really young. And so, like, you know, to some extent, like, yes, you're saying he's being self-congratulatory, but he's also a 17-year-old. So, like, that, you know, does that make it better? Not necessarily, and especially if his brothers are older and more mature than that. So, like, you know, kind of when you grow out of a stage and you look down on the people who are still at that stage, and you're like, wow, they're so mature, how did they do that? So, like, that could be, to some extent, what's happening. Is that, like, they're resentful that he's doing these things, even though they probably did it themselves or would have wanted to when they were his age. Okay, so let's go back to let's continue with some of the other just ideas that we have. I know it's just throwing out a lot of ideas, analyzing each one. Okay, so the Reshit Rabbati. So the Reshit Rabbati, is going to, it's just one line, but it's just going to give a basic idea of, like, why that, another idea of, like, why B'nai Bilhah specifically.
At B'nai Bilhah, Lefisha Bilhah Gadla Yosef, Lekach Haya Omed Imeha.
So,
I'm gonna, like, explain, but I'd rather just
go for it.
Yeah? Okay. Is it that, like, because Bilha was like the one who raised Yosef, that like her children had a more relationship.
Yeah. So it's interesting because here it's not like, oh, yeah, he likes them, so he's their savior because the rest of Melea hate him. It's kind of another reason, just because, like, you know, now that Rachel's died, so now he's grown up in Bilha's house. And so just as far as, like, I don't know, as far as, like, motivations now, any ideas, like, you know, growing up together, why they would want to sell him, do bad to him of some sort? Because that they definitely had the intent of.
I could take, like, the Menachem Leibtag route.
Okay.
I mean, this really applies to all the brothers, but it could even refer especially to here, the B'nai Bilha, in that his idea is that the brothers saw Yosef as a threat to the leadership. As in, we don't want Yosef, the favorite, to be our next leader, the chosen one. So if we just get rid of him, then we can become the leaders. And then even though they grew up together and they could have had an affinity for each other, there still could have been that desire to kind of, like, take the rug out from under his feet so that they could promote themselves and being the future chosen leaders.
Yeah, I mean, it's also, like, to some extent, they might think of him a little bit as a usurper, possibly. Like, yo, this is our mom, and now all of a sudden, like, you're being treated as if she's also your mom.
And it's obvious that Yaakov had a lot of love, I mean, favored Yosef over the rest of the brothers, so now the fact that, like, they take over their mom, plus they don't even have their own dad, it can really add a lot to it.
Yeah. I feel like this is all conjecture. Did you say something?
No, I'm saying it's like, it's interesting that you put it in the positive section.
Yeah.
Where it's like, we're viewing it big enough, it really goes both ways.
Because it's kind of...
I'm saying it goes both ways. It's interesting. Like, you can just read into it.
Right. Because I think, the idea that I'm trying to bring out is like, you know, even, because that's really the big question. It's like, you know, if we say, if we just read it straight, that they have a positive relationship, they grow up together, but then, like, we still have them selling him, and that's weird. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why we kind of have to, like, a little bit put a negative spin on some of this stuff, just to, like, try to figure out, like, how is this even happening?
We're running out of time, so keep going.
Okay. So just to, like, sum up what the Rashi and Rashbam say. So Rashbam is just, yo, hu na'ar et b'nei Bilha b'nei Zilpa, is just a way of saying, like, he hangs out with them all the time. And Rashi also is like, v'ragil etzel b'nei Bilha. And l'fisha yu achav mivazinotan hu mikarba. And Rashi's kind of getting this from, like, some of the midrashim we saw before, that the others are treating poorly and we're treating him positively. So the Ramban actually kind of asks the question that we have, which is what we mentioned before, is that if, you know, they're the ones who are, if he's treating them so well, why are they going to be the one to turn on them? You know, because we are going to have the majority. So he gives a few different types of ways to understand the Hunar B'nei Bilha B'nei Zilpa. So one of them is that since he's a kid, so, like, he always has to tag along with them all the time, and kind of needs to follow them around. And then because he's with them and following them around all the time, so then he can then report back to his father, like, every single time they do a bad thing. So it's sort of, it's taking the idea that you know, they're watching over him, and, you know, he's together with them, and he's now, and then he might not even necessarily be doing it maliciously, like, you know, just reporting back when they do negative things, but, you know, the idea is he's with them, and he sees what they're doing, and reports back to his father, and, you know, they don't like that he's doing that. And then later, and so that gives them motivation. And then the other brothers, when it continues, that Yaakov loved Yosef more, so that explains, you know, the rest of the brothers' motivation. But it's still the idea that the Lashon Hara is just about B'nai Bilha and B'nai Zilpa, and that could be what their motivation is. And the end, he brings in Unkelus, and it's the idea that, again, like, they're raising him. You know, he's a Nar, he's a son, and so B'nai Bilha and B'nai Zilpa are raising him. And again, you know, and so he's bringing Lashon Hara with him. So I think just what I wanted to bring from this was the idea that, like, the whole story of why Yosef was sold is kind of a perplexing story. And, like, I don't think any of us would disagree that it's you know, why, what's going on here, and why are we, why are people making these decisions is really interesting. And so I just found it fascinating that, you know, we can get such different, like, so many different approaches to this, like, one relationship between Yosef and just, like, four of his brothers, which can give, like, a lot of different reasons, like, different ways of saying, like, okay, so why is he sold? Why don't they like him? What's going on? And I think that's just really interesting that whether we see the relationship as a positive or a negative one, we know what happens in the end. So just at what point do we say, like, you know, something went wrong, and what's going on here?
Thanks. Yeah, thank you. Oh, something that really fascinates me.